Well, Mr. Burton, I believe you can tell us about the day in the life of a horse keeper.
Well, yes, I think I can. That was a very interesting life when people was a horse keeper. It was a profession, if you like to call it a profession. It was needed a lot of dedication, love of animals, and it was hard work, but very enjoyable. Well, the first thing you, in the mornings when you went along to get your horses in the winter time, they laid in the yards, in the covered yards. You'd get them in the stable. The first thing you'd do would light your lantern, would be an oil lamp with just the paraffin and a wick.
That's like the ones we got down in the museum.
That's
with,
right.
With the man.
And very often they'd only show a very dim light because the glass would be smoked up
completely.
But
yeah.
Anyway, you'd put that in, and usually it'd be about 5 to 5 past, because every horse keeper worth his salt would always see his horse had 2 hours feeding before he was taken out to work.
2 hours?
2 hours feeding. That was about the time it took to make a horse satisfied.
Cool.
And you fed him little and often. That was small amounts at a time. Because if you put it in his manger, very thick, the breath from his nose would make the food warm and not palatable. So it was one of the, or a good horse keeper would always feed his horses with very small quantities and very often.
Amazing. You just sort of imagine them pouring it all
no,
in.
No. Well, the first thing you did when you got your light alight, you'd get them in, and they'd always come into the same position. They knew the position in the stable to stand, and they'd always go in the right position. You'd tie them up to the mangers, and you'd give them the first feed, which would be chaff, that is chopped straw, oats.
Done on the old hand chaff cutter?
No, they used to be done by the threshing machines then, the engine and the chaff cutter.
Yeah.
It used to be cut and stored in a chaff place, and so get a little bit of heat on it to make it a nice smell. And they always think that oat straw was very good for horses. And they'd give them 1 stone of oats a day was a good ration of corn, 14 pounds.
That's quite a lot.
And then they'd have chaff and ground mangels, and probably give them a little ground linseed oil or something like that to keep them coats in good condition.
Yeah, sort of silky and that.
That's right. Well, you do that, and while they was feeding, you'd get your curry comb and your brush, and they'd be brushed and combed all over.
All the horses?
All the horses, yes. It wouldn't take about 10 minutes to do each horse. You'd do that while they was feeding and keep feeding them along at the same time. And you went along, you pulled the tails out with the comb, and then you braid the tail up before they went to work each morning, so that didn't get pulled in the dirt during the day. And also, you see, when they had a crupper put round the tail, it was much easier to thread through.
Yeah.
So while they was feeding, you did all this, and then you'd nip out and get your breakfast. And the farmer, if he was working for a farmer, he'd tell you what horses were needed to work that day. And they would be yoked. We called it yoked. That was the name for it. That means putting the harness on the horses. Of course, if he was going in a cart, the horse, he'd just have his collar put on, which he always put on upside down and turned over the way his mane lays. He always turned it one way.
So you put it on upside down with the hames pointing downwards?
That's right. And you always turned it to the left when you was facing the horse.
To the left?
Because the mane was always hanging over that way.
Oh, I see. Then you didn't get it all ruffled up.
That's right. Then you'd still hang the bridle on the horse's aim so he could still continue feeding, and then you'd put his saddle on, and that horse would be ready for working in shafts.
Yeah.
If the farmer wanted to go to plough, you'd put the collar on in the same way, the bridle hang it on its aim, and then you'd put a crupper from the collar along its back
to his tail.
On his tail, and then you'd put the plough traces over. Or if you wanted 4 traces on, that was when a horse pulled on the front of a cart or a roll or anything in shafts. They had what we called 4 gears, 4 traces or 4 gears. Well, that meant a different set of traces. So each horse keeper knew exactly what each horse was going to do on that day.
And then he'd harness them up according to
jobs. And when the men came to work, they'd take the horse, whichever they were going to use, and put his bridle on, and they'd take him off to do the job. Of course, there are several ways of attaching the horses to the different implements. It all depends whether you wanted 2 or 3, or 1 behind, 2 in front, 3 single. There are several different methods of attaching the horses to different implements. it was very nice to work three horses. If you had three abreast, that was three, one.
Yeah.
And you had what they call the line mare. That was the horse you drive. We always drive them with a single rein, one single rein.
Not two?
No. One single rein. We always drove the horses with one single rein. And it was quite easy when you got used to it. You put the horse in the middle of what you called your line mare or line horse. That was the one you were driving.
That's the important one, though.
That was in the middle.
Yeah.
You'd have one on the off side and one on the near side. You'd tie the one on the off side from the bridle, attach it to the one in the middle, to the line mare's collar. And you'd do the same the other side.
Yeah.
There was a line placed on the off side horse's bit, comes over its aim, and attached to the line mare's traces. That's to stop it to getting too forward.
Yeah.
And opposite way,
same
on the near side one. And then you'd got the horse trees, that was the wooden things it attached the traces to, and they'd be attached to the implement. And you could drive them quite easily with one rein when you got used to it. Usually I had the older horse, what was more used to it, what they call in the line.
Yeah.
And if you wanted them to turn right, you gave the line a jerk, and said, which, geo, which, and they'd turn right. If you wanted them to come left, you gave the line a slight pull and held it tight and said, come here, and they'd turn left.
And they sort of learnt this?
They learnt that, yes. And if you've got three good horses, you could practically turn them around without touching the line.
Well, just saying, which, geo, and come here.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
It was most fascinating how those horses knew what you was talking about. And when you was working along, probably sometimes during the day, they'd probably want to urinate, you see. Well, they would raise the tail and probably do a little straddle, and you'd know if you was an horse keeper what was happening. So you'd just stop, and you had a little whistle for that, and the horse would do it. You'd go... And that horse would start and do it, and then you'd carry on.
Oh, amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
God. So you really knew your horses, weren't you?
Well, that was your life. You was interested in them. And the horse keeper, he'd always take his three horses, if he wanted three, and his favourite ones, and no one else would get those. And the men who worked on the farm would probably have to have the ones that was left over, the elderly ones or the worst.
Really? So the horse keeper would have...
He'd always have his choice, and he didn't like it much if someone else used his horses.
Wouldn't he?
No. They was very particular about that.
Oh.
They took great pride in seeing after the horses. Oh, gosh, you worked all day, and when it got about 2:30, or depends quite how far you were from home, you'd usually sort of come back, get them home about 3, you take off the harness, hang it up in the harness place, you put the horses to it, give them some drink of water, probably turn them in the yards and let them have a little bit of hay while you had your dinner. And then about 4:00 you'd go out and you'd feed them then while 6:15 time. So that's good.
Another 2 hours.
Another good 2 hours, yes. And during that time they was feeding, you'd probably just wash the shoulders down, get the sweat marks off.
Yeah.
Because they'd very easily chafe, where they was pulling all day on the shoulders.
Really?
And the weathers, yes.
What happened if they did chafe then? What did you do then?
Well, that was... Unless the collar lining was bad, it was bad horse keeping if they chafe, because you wasn't doing your job by keeping them clean.
So it's a sort of a mark of a bad horseman if they did chafe?
Unless the collar was in bad condition.
Yeah.
And if you did get a little lump come in the shoulder sometimes... Well, then what you did, you got a stocking and you filled it with straw or hay and you tied that in the collar just above the swelling or just below it, so that took the pressure. So there was no pressure just on the sore point. And that was unavoidable. The horse keeper couldn't avoid that, That's what used to happen. And also, if they got really bad, there was a special collar called a breeching collar. That didn't go actually round the neck. That they pulled more from the chest. I think you've seen them in the Lord Mayor's shows, those type of collars there. And you could work a mare if you got sore shoulders.
So you had the choice of collars?
Well, you didn't often use one, but most farmers kept one in case an horse had an eccentric shoulder, yes.
Ah. And you'd store all these in the harness room, would you?
Yes. when it was a wet day, you'd oil them and keep them all in good condition.
Was that with linseed oil?
No, that'd be special harness oil.
Harness oil.
Leather, for the leather, yes. And you always kept your eye on your horses. You know, you was very interested in them. You'd see if they'd wanted shoeing, what wet days. If it was a wet day, you'd probably take them up to the blacksmith and have them shod up. It was the most interesting life. And then there was the time of the season when the stallions used to come round and visit the farms and you'd mate your mares.
Well, stallions would come round to the farms?
Yes, they used to walk round. I can remember in hiding them alone when there'd be perhaps eight to ten stallions would visit the village. There'd be the Persians, the Suffolks or the Shires. You'd take your choice then, which one you fancied you liked best or which you thought was the best horse.
Really?
The fee used to be around about £1.50 or £2 per mare. That was about the stud fee. And the stallion men used to walk around and they'd visit the farms and they usually lay in the local pub.
Uh-huh.
That's where they'd lay the horse and lodge there for the night and then move on to the next villages the next day.
And you sort of make arrangements for them? To...
Well, they'd come round and see you and see if you wanted to use their horse and you'd probably say, well, I'll put so many mares out. Well, then they'd visit you every day, every week, once a week, at a certain day.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
And you could arrange your own crossbreeds then, could you?
Yes, whichever you fancied you'd use.
Well, what did they reckon to be a sort of good cross for horses, or wasn't there one?
A lot of people did go to the Persian on the Shire, so it made the Shire, that did away a little of the hair in its legs, so it made it a little lighter, and only got all the hair to get in the mud. A lot of people thought the half-bred Persian was a very good cross to work.
They did?
It was too, yes. That was very successful. But a lot of people kept to the true Shire, some kept to the true Persian, or the true Suffolk. Suffolks were not quite as popular in this area. Messrs. Chivers and Sons of Aldworth, they was very big Persian people and they had nothing, only Persians on their farm,
really?
French Persians.
Yeah.
And a lot of people did use their stallions and cross them with the Shire mares and got quite good results.
Really?
Yes.
And they'd be a really good, strong cart horse, wouldn't
they? Yes, a bit lighter in the leg than the Shire, and probably when also in beat, and a lot of jobs, they was a bit better for it, but being a bit, yes, not
right.
Quite so clumsy. A lot of people thought that was a very good cross.
Well, where would you get all your harness and saddles from? Would you go to the town?
Well, in every village there was an harness maker, because it was and a blacksmith. I think in Aden there was three blacksmiths, I remember, and one harness maker. Well, there'd perhaps be 300 or 400 horses or more than that working in the village, you see, so it was...
In the village?
Oh, yes.
3 or 4?
I mean, on 100 acres land, most men would keep anything up to 4 horses, and perhaps if they got 500 acres land, they'd keep 20, 30 horses.
Really? That's a lot of horses then, isn't it?
One horse keeper, usually if he had about 10 horses, was about as many as he could really see after and do them properly.
Yeah. And so the farm would employ the horse keeper specifically for looking after these horses?
Yes, and work in the best team.
Ah, you'd work the best team in the contract as well.
And then they had what they call the second horseman. He'd take the second team.
Ah, so you had a horseman and
a second horseman on the big farm, yes.
And then farm hands, which would
they'd use the odd horses for the odd jobs.
Yeah.
Yes. When a lot of the horsemen used to go on what they call on the road, that would probably be carting stuff up to the stations or going to the next village. They'd usually put the brasses on and try to make them look very smart.
Make them look smart,
yes.
Yeah. Because they
was proud to think they'd got some probably better horses than someone else.
Did they used to use the railway for transporting down the bottom?
Yes, they used to cart the stuff up to the railways.
What sort of stuff?
Sugar beet, potatoes, and also the corn.
Really?
18 stone sacks of wheat.
How many would they get in a cart then?
Well, they'd bet a ton. A horse was usually, that was a good load, with 1 ton per horse.
That was? In the big old tumbrels?
In the tumbrels, yes. If you had 30 on the way, you'd probably put a horse and 4 traces on the front, you know, so you had 2 horses on it.
Yeah.
But about 1 ton was a good load for the ordinary Shire horse.
It was?
That was about, yes.
And then you'd load them up at the station?
You'd load them up in your farm by carrying the corn in a wagon ladder and popping it in the...
Yeah.
And men could carry 18 stone of wheat, or 19 stone of beans, 16 stone of barley, or 12 stone of oats, still made up the ton, of course, in the numbers.
Yeah.
And they could do it quite easily.
What?
And when they got to the station, they'd unload it and put it in the trucks.
And the trucks there. Did you ever sort of take things from the station, like seed or anything like that?
Yes, you fetched artificial manure from the station. That came up by to the railways, and the coal all came by railways.
Would you pay for this at the station, or would it be on contract?
Oh, no. Wouldn't pay for it at the station, no. Whoever bought your corn, that was your bargain to deliver your corn, potatoes, what have you, to the station. They paid the rail fare.
They paid the rail fare. And when you bought fertiliser?
That's what the fertiliser people delivered it to Andam Station or whatever village you lived in, and you collected it from there.
So the railway was quite a link there?
Oh, that was big business.
It was. Were you sad to see it go?
Well, no, not really, because it got... Those that lived, were, say, 2 miles from the station. Well, if you did 3 trips a day with one horse, which would only be carting 3 ton a day, it got rather slow and expensive as the times moved on.
It was all right for sort of the village, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. But I think it got outdated, unfortunately. Our railway station was actually in the centre of the village, which had been better if it would. But there was a lot of business done at Adnam Station in those days.
What was the
I think, if I remember rightly, I think they kept... I think there used to be 4 in the office, and I think there used to be 4 men working in the yard all the time.
Well, there's the brickworks around there as well, wasn't there?
Yes. I just remember those brickworks.
You do?
Yes. A lot of the bricks used to go on rail. I think that's why the brickyards was built near the station.
Yeah, so they'd take the bricks out on the train as well. Mm. Were the bricks ever used by people in the village?
Yes.
They were?
Yes. There are odd bricks about still, and people still got with Adnam Brick Company on.
Yeah, so, you know, so sort of that end of the village down Station Road area was
I don't know if you ever realised it. You know the ballast hole in where they used to play tennis? Near the old cemetery in Church Lane.
Yeah,
Well, that was dug out to help to make the line between Adnam and Sutton.
Was it?
That's where the soil, some of that went. I think it was double downhill, they ran trucks.
Really?
To make it up, yes. Some of the sand stuff, yes.
Never knew that. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, as the railway started to decline, do you remember cars coming in?
Yes. I don't remember actually the first one, but I can remember a lot after they'd been in a small time. There was the old bull-nosed Morris. I remember those cars. I always remember the old story going. There was a big farmer in the Fen, or I won't say his name, but the family still farms in there. They came up the road one day, and the roadman was working on the road, cleaning up the roads. The horses were still using fail in the streets then, as naturally they do. And this gentleman stopped and said to him, George, he said, what do you think to my car? Well, he said, it looks very nice, sir. He said, would you like a ride in it? He said, I should very much, sir. So he took this chap who was doing the road up, and he brought him back. He said, well, what do you think to it, George? Well, he said, it's very nice, sir, but if you had to work for the side, you'd never had it. I think they took it in good humour, but it was the truth, wasn't it?
Yeah, not half. Yeah.
Yes, but also the cars came in, and the tractors more or less came in at the same period, or just similar to it. Well, the first tractors were very primitive, as you've noticed from your museum, to what they are today. But as when the horses used to go down to the station carting the stuff, most people who started buying tractors, well, they started on the spade lug wheels or the cleats. They were the first ones. Well, it wasn't long then before they got the rubber tyre came out. And they bought small trailers, and they used to go to the stations with the tractors and trailers, which was much quicker and more efficient than the horses.
Yeah.
And that's when the horses began to decline and the tractors more or less came in. And there was a big improvement in the tractors in a very few years. And then the war came along. Well, then they sort of really improved very quickly after that.
Well, where did they get the first tractors from around here? Where's the sort of agent?
Well, there was Gravens at Ely, a very old established firm who used to make steam engines in the first beginning, and they more or less went on to the tractors. They were the Ford agents.
Oh, yeah.
F.T. Ruston and Sons of St. Ives they was the international agents, and they was mostly the two suppliers that did most of the business around this area anyway.
Would they be the little baby Fords and with the big wide mudguards?
The first Fords that came out hadn't got any mudguards, they'd got just cleats.
Really?
And there was also a make called a Titan Overtime. That was a very crude type of tractor, but they did the job. That was the start, and they were very soon improved upon.
What did the old horsemen reckon to these here tractors?
Well, they didn't think much to them. I mean, they didn't like to part with the horses. They thought it was just a waste of time. The argument, they used to say, well, a tractor can't breed a foal like a horse can. Well, no, you've got some horses, they can breed foals. And the tractor can't. Then the other answer used to be, well, tractors don't eat when they're not working. Horses do.
Yeah.
And that used to be the conversation used to go. But anyway, life kind of get a bit easier when the tractors came. There wasn't the walking.
Yeah.
With the tractors, you was riding, which was probably better. Perhaps not for your old boys, but
there weren't so many fit blokes.
No, that's quite true. But anyway, that area soon improved, and they got to the rubber tires, I say, and the trailers came along, and they soon got so they was carrying 3 or 4 tons, and the horses sort of went off the roads pretty quickly then.
Yeah.
A lot of farmers kept 1 or 2 horses to do odd jobs, light jobs. Some kept them for sentimental reasons, and to breed a few foals to keep them in, which it's a good job they did. Otherwise, we should have been very short
now.
Yeah,
we would, yeah.
But that was sort of the more or less the turning point of it in 1932 or 1933, and then the war came along in 1939, and things began to move pretty quickly then.
What sort of happened when the war came along? Did it affect the village very much?
Well, it did, really. It affected everybody. I mean, not an awful lot of men went off the land, because that was really privileged, you know, to be on the land, and they didn't want to take it because the country needed food.
Yeah.
It was exempt, a lot of the men on the land. A few went, but they kept as men on the land to produce food as they could, because it was necessary.
Yeah.
It was a very... Well, no one really knew what was going to happen. A lot of people thought the war would probably be over in a matter of weeks instead of going on for 4 years, 5 years.
Was the rationing very strict around here?
Well, I think the country people are more fortunate, because they didn't know how many eggs the hens laid, and they didn't know how much milk the cows gave, so I don't think anyone was really starved. I mean, we didn't always get what food we wanted, but we always had something.
Yeah,
it was to kill our own pig. You was allowed to kill 2 pigs a year.
Really?
So you was never really short of pig meat, but sometimes you had it in the salt pots. There was no deep freezes then.
No.
You used to put it in the salt pots, and in the summertime when you cut it out, it was a bit yellow and a bit salty, but still.
Yeah,
beggars couldn't be choosers. You had it was better than nothing.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone really was short of food, probably. You didn't get transport quite so well. Petrol was a bit tighter.
Yeah, and rations and things
like
that.
Which, quite naturally, it should be. I mean, the armed forces came first all the time. But I think we was much more fortunate in the country than what there was in the towns.
You do?
Mm. As regards of food, anyway. Because you couldn't tell how many potatoes you grew, could you?
No. Well, on the subject of food and drink, there were quite a few pubs in the village, weren't there?
Yes, I think the actual figure... Was there somewhere in the region of 30, 1 or 2 up or 1 or 2 down? I don't exactly know, but somewhere around the 30 pubs.
That's an awful lot in a village the size of Haddenham, isn't it?
There's a lot of pubs. It makes you wonder how they all got the living, doesn't it? Today
it does.
There's only about 3, is there?
That's
an awful lot of pubs.
What other sorts of entertainment was there in the village? There wasn't sort of that much, was there?
Well, when I was a boy, I mean, most of the boys made their own entertainment. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. I mean, we used to go along with the nets, catching the birds, what we call tooting. I don't know if you ever heard of
tooting.
That. Yes.
Yeah.
We used to have a net with 2 poles on it, with an engine at the top, so we used to shake it up the roofs of the stacks, which, you know, there's no bale stacks then, it was all loose straw stacks.
Yeah.
We used to catch the sparrows.
Sparrows, yeah.
Sparrows and that type of thing. And there was... Of course, those days you could spin your top on the road or run your hoop, and there was no danger of cars running you down. But
no,
you wouldn't get a car come through by 1 in an hour, perhaps, or something like that. So there's no danger. You'd hear them coming a mile away before you got there.
Backfire
at about 25 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and that's the sort of the boys played marbles. the grown-ups, there was always the pubs. I think that's why pubs was more popular then, because a lot of the men would go up for a drink in the evening.
What about the ladies?
Well, I think they stayed home with the children. I think they had the worst end of the stick in those days.
They didn't, they? Were there any sort of clubs for blokes then?
Well, not as there is now. I think the church used to run an institute for the young people.
They did.
But most men would go and be satisfied with the point. Of course, if they was horse keepers, as we were talking about a few minutes ago, I mean, they wouldn't finish work before 6 or 7, and there was no 5-day a week then. It was 6 days a week.
Yeah, so they'd be working sort of 6 till 6 almost.
And they had the horses to feed on the Sundays the same as any other day, you see. People didn't go out the same.
There wasn't much spare time then, was there?
Well, they didn't. I don't think they got the money to go out with, unless they just went and had the odd glass of beer and the conversation for their relaxation over the weekend.
The money was much shorter, wasn't it?
Oh, it was much shorter then. I can remember the agricultural wage was 30 shillings a week. That was £1.50 in our money now. And there was 9 pence of that stopped for an insurance benefit.
What?
And so they used to go home with 29 and threepence, and the horse keepers used to have about £1.75 to £2 a week. So they'd get about, you might say, another, well, 10 shillings or 15 shillings in. In the money of them days, more than the ordinary man who worked from 7 till 4. That was the hours, 7 till 4. Yes. And the horse keeper used to do about 12 hours a day.
Yeah. It's a long time and a lot of work. You get more for the money then, though, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, but no one seemed to worry then, because everyone was in the same position.
Yeah.
Or everyone worked longer hours. There was more satisfaction then than there is today. People were more interested in the job and in the life and what they was doing. They hadn't got the money, so they never really wanted to go far. Now today, yeah. I mean, people have got the money and they're never satisfied unless they're going out somewhere, which is perhaps all the better, but I don't know. But there was more satisfaction and contentment in those days.
And they weren't sort of holidays or anything like that, were they?
The holidays they used to get Christmas Day, Boxing Day and Good Friday. And probably they might get half a day off on the local feast Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, because she had feast days then. Quite a big thing, weren't they?
Quite a big thing, yes. It used to usually be a cricket match in Adenham on feast Tuesday, and then there'd have a gala and some sports, which most people in the village used to attend.
Yeah, a sort of social gathering, wasn't it?
Yes, and on the Adenham feast Sunday, the village band used to be on the green, and they'd have decorated floats, usually with horses in them. It used to look very nice. And then on the Monday night, they'd have their amusements. They'd come along, and there'd be crowds up Monday and Tuesday.
Really?
Yes. Nearly everyone would go to the feast for those 2 or 3 days and meet people they probably hadn't seen from the last feast. And they still lived in the village.
Yeah, yeah.
There's never a chat. They used to thoroughly enjoy that. A few people would get drunk and be a few fights.
Oh, of course, as there always is, yeah. Get old hoo-ha up the green.
That's right. They were very little. Everyone was more contented those days.
Yeah. Life is more enjoyable.
Well, I think that's a matter of opinion whether it's enjoyable or not. I don't know what to say. I think that people stay put and seen after the families.
Yeah.
It's quite a different life. I don't think I'd like to go back to it anymore anyway.
You don't?
I don't think I would, no.